Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Welcome to the Peter King Podcast. This week, coming to you from the sidelines of the San Francisco 49ers training camp, Santa Clara, California, have an interesting show for you this week. We're going to have 49ers veteran cornerback Richard Sherman and the young star running back from the Carolina Panthers, Christian McCaffrey, who I spoke with earlier on my training camp trip. In addition, 5 minutes with a writer, Matt Maiocco of NBC Sports Bay Area, going to drop some knowledge about the 49ers this year. So why am I coming to you live from the 49ers sidelines? I just thought it'd be cool if you could hear what training camp sounds like. And so as we stand here, I'm watching Jimmy Garoppolo, C.J. Beathard, Nick Mullins basically take turns throwing to the receiver group, just throwing to them against the top corners on this team. And music is playing consistently. Kyle Shanahan, the coach of the Niners, is like so many young coaches in the NFL. He loves to see players respond to music as it's played during practice, during training camp. And I thought coming into this week, it might be interesting to basically tell you a little bit about what these training camps are like. You probably have in your imagination what they're like if you don't go attend any of these camps. But essentially, it's not a particularly violent process anymore. There's not a lot of big hitting at these camps, as you could imagine. And although the 49ers are padded today, I doubt there's going to be very much. We're early in practice right now, of a two-hour practice in the morning here on the south side of Santa Clara, California. And we're early in practice, but it doesn't look like it's going to be a very physical day. Kyle Shanahan has started his training camp process thinking that he wanted to run a more physical camp, and they got 10 to 12 players hurt and early on, including Nick Bosa, the first-round draft choice, suffered a high ankle sprain when somebody fell into his leg. And so he's questionable for the start of the season. Talk about that with Matt Maiocco a little bit later on. But training camps are so much different. When I started doing this job, pardon the air horn, they're now going to the fifth period, and that came right into your ear, I'm sure. But when I started covering the NFL 1984 in Cincinnati, basically the Bengals trained in Wilmington, Ohio, and had two training camp practices every day in pads, one from 9 to 11 and one from 3 to 5. So it was it's a little bit different now, where there's a two-hour practice, but it's not very physical. And I think the whole emphasis by all these coaches, have your guys ready for the start of the season. And if you got Jimmy Garoppolo, who basically has 10 NFL starts, and he's 27 years old, and you've already paid him a boatload of money, you need Jimmy Garoppolo to be healthy for the start of the season. So, you know, as you watch this, one of the things that I always look for is, how are players who are coming back from injury looking? So I'll be focused for the majority of this practice on Jimmy Garoppolo. who is suited up in a black jersey, basically the black jersey with the red lettering, do not touch the quarterback. He's wearing the black jersey. Some teams wear red. The 49ers put their guys in black. And so as we speak, Jimmy Garoppolo is taking a snap, doing play action, and he throws the ball down deep downfield. I can't make out the number involved, but you just want to see, he's in shotgun, but you want to see how is he looking and how is his preparation going for the start of the season. Kyle Shanahan told me earlier that he expects Garoppolo to be able to play without restrictions coming off his week 3 ACL tear last September in Kansas City. He won't play very much. He will play a little bit in training in the preseason. Shanahan basically came out early on and said he's not going to play much in the preseason. And there's a jet overhead, which you might hear from the nearby San Jose International Airport. But he will play some in the preseason now, probably a couple of series this week, and maybe some in week 3 against the Kansas City Chiefs. So that's a little bit of a taste of training camp. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoy the conversations with Richard Sherman, Christian McCaffrey, and Matt Maiocco. I'd also like to remind everybody who listens to this podcast, you'll get a great education, and not only an education, but some fun listening to Chris Sims' Unbuttoned podcast this week. I was with him on the road as he got extended time with Odell Beckham Jr. one day in Berea, Ohio with the Browns, and then the next day in Latrobe, Pennsylvania with Ben Roethlisberger. And what I really like about the way Kyle does his interviews and his podcasting is that he talks to players like they're having a conversation, not like he's interviewing them. And he's talks to them about what he's curious about. I loved his question to Odell Beckham where he said, "What's your second best catch ever?" That's a great question. I wish I had thought of that. But anyway, you'll enjoy that this week on the Chris Sims Unbuttoned podcast. So please, after you listen to this dropping of football knowledge, please download Chris's Unbuttoned podcast and you get a lot of education. So let's start off this week, and we're going to go immediately to Richard Sherman right here in Santa Clara. And we basically get into an awful lot with Richard Sherman about both the past and the present. You know, his sort of mourning about the Legion of Boom not being around anymore and what he thinks of this year's Niners. So here's my conversation with Richard Sherman. So happy to be joined by Richard Sherman of the San Francisco 49ers, which still really, really sounds weird, but probably not weird to you. But Richard, thanks. We're sitting here in Santa Clara, California, at the 49ers stadium, actually, and your training facility, and you're getting ready for another season. How's it going?
It's been great so far. You know, yeah. We've been having a really good camp. I've really been enjoying it. Happy to be here with you.
So, Richard, I want to tell people how you and I kind of got to know each other at first. So, in 2013... I started this website called the MMQB at Sports Illustrated, and I wanted a player to be a columnist. And when I talked to the powers that be at Sports Illustrated, they said, "Okay, who are you thinking of?" And I said, "Well, the top guy on my list is this guy, plays for the Seahawks," and they interrupted me right away, and they said, "Russell Wilson." And I said, "No." I said, I like Russell Wilson, but I said, I really want somebody who will speak openly about a lot of different things. And I said, his name is Richard Sherman. And one of the people in the room when I mentioned this did not know who you were.
Oh, no.
And so I just said, "Listen, just take a leap of faith with me. I'm going to go out to Seattle, ask him if he'll do it." I said, "He's going to be a free agent next year. So I think he'll be motivated a little bit to want to get his story out, because, you know, a lot of times Seattle sort of seems like it's New Zealand."
Right.
You know, it's so far away.
Right, right.
Yeah. So anyway, I went out and I met you in Seattle. And I met you
at a Macklemore concert.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And we talked at that Macklemore concert, and I explained this concept, and it only took you about 5 minutes to say yes, that you wanted to do it. So throughout the course of the year, you were really, really good in what you said, in what you wrote. You took it very seriously. You did an excellent job. And I want to fast forward now to the NFC Championship game.
Okay.
After you guys win the game and you make a deflection off Michael Crabtree at the end of the game, a play that was later voted as the biggest play in Seahawks franchise history. And afterwards, as you know, and as everyone will remember, you had the massive rant on the field,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of things can happen after football games, and some of them are not all going to be altogether unfiltered.
Right.
And so I want to start there, and I want you to tell me at that moment, when you look back on it now, what thoughts were going through your mind when you stepped to the mic with Aaron Andrews?
Well, I feel like I've answered that question a gazillion times, but I'll answer it again. It was pure joy. It was completion. It was intensity. It was some anger. It was joy that we had done it. You know, we had made it to the Super Bowl, but more it was just competitiveness. You know, my competitiveness. I don't think I fully understood like going to the Super Bowl. Yeah, I understood that I won. And that's all that mattered to me. The rest was going to come together, and I think that was a microcosm for how we saw the season. We just wanted to win, and I won the moment. And it was a matchup that had been talked about and something that we had discussed pregame. That, you know, a lot of background to that. But
so the thing I remember most about that is that I was not covering the game that day, and I said, man, if there's any way we could get Richard Sherman to write a column live off this game. Robert Klemko at the MMQB, who worked with you during the course of the year, was able to get a hold of you, and we basically, at about 1 o'clock in the morning, Seattle time,
yeah.
you basically worked on this column. And the reason that I thought it was so great and so kind of good for you is that about 2 or 3 days after we ran it, a friend of mine who works in Washington, he's a journalist, and he called and he said, you know, somebody in the press secretary's office said that Barack Obama had read your column and had referenced that in a conversation with some reporters.
Wow.
And so I just, there's something from that column that I thought was really terrific, and I just want to read. First of all, the headline of the column: to those who would call me a thug or worse. And what you wrote in here is, to those who would call me a thug or worse because I show passion on a football field, don't judge a person's character by what they do between the lines. Judge a man by what he does off the field, what he does for his community, what he does for his family. But people find it easy to take shots on Twitter and to use racial slurs and bullying language far worse than what you'll see from me. It's sad and somewhat unbelievable to me that the world is still this way, but it is. I can handle it. So as you wrote that, and as that kind of appeared, what do you remember about the reaction to that column? And what do you remember about the aftermath of that day?
Well, I mean, it was the aftermath was crazy. It was insanity. You know, both positive and negative. You know, it was such a big moment in Seattle history. It was such a big moment for that fan base, for just football in general. So I think that reverberated through the social media sphere. But there was also a lot of negative. You know, a lot of negative just right off the bat. Just people hateful. Oh my God, he's a thug. Oh my God, an angry black man. Oh my God, look how aggressive he is. And in that moment, just, you know, I'm kid, I feel like my parents raised me the right way. You know, I didn't curse. I didn't do anything because I'm always conscious of that. You know, like I said, good parents, they keep you very, very much aware of how you're speaking and what you're speaking. But, you know, I couldn't necessarily control the volume and the intensity of the talk because I'm too hyped up. You know, I can control the message. I can control the what what I'm really, the message I'm really trying to get out there, the context. But I remember days after it, people who had just sent me terrible messages, sending me messages to apologize after the MMQB had come out, because they had passed judgment too quickly. They had passed judgment way before they had any facts. They judged it off a moment. And I think it gave a lot of people retrospect and the ability to look at them and introspect, to look at themselves and say, how many times do I do this? How often do I make a decision? How often do I pass judgment without facts, without information, without background, without knowledge? And I take it as just that. I take, man, this person is this way. I'm taking fact and I don't need anything else. And this time I gave them facts. I gave them background, and it made them look at the whole world a different way. At least some people, some people, you pass judgment. It doesn't matter what facts, nobody's going to, your truth is going to be your truth. But I think a lot of people with conscious and moral brains went back and looked at themselves and said, maybe I'm doing something wrong.
When I spoke to Earl Thomas a couple of weeks ago in Baltimore, and I understand that the NFL is not for long. I get that. But I don't know why. As somebody who really likes football, I really wish the Legion of Boom lasted longer.
Yeah,
don't you? When you look back now,
I just wish things would have gone a little differently. I think the guys that played, Earl, Cam, myself, Byron Maxwell, Brandon Browner, of course, Walter Thurman III, Jeremy Lane. I just wish things had gone differently for that group in general. I wish. Things have gone different in the way the franchise treated them, especially, Earl and Cam, and myself included. Things could have went better. There have been guys who've played for franchises much longer and done, things that we had kind of done for that franchise and changed the trajectory. But, it is what it is. Decisions were made, and you live and you learn and you move forward.
As you sit here right now, there's basically two things on your plate that people should know. Number one, helping turn around the 49ers. And number two, being a prominent member of the NFLPA right now on the executive board. And you're involved in the meetings with the NFL to try to get a new collective bargaining agreement. So that everybody understands, this collective bargaining agreement lasts for two more seasons. So there's no chance of a job action anytime soon. But as somebody who has been in the meetings early on in this process, with some optimism on the outside that, hey, maybe it won't go right up to the deadline. Maybe you'll actually be able to get something done. What have you seen? I know you can't be specific on what you're discussing. What's been the tenor of the talks, and what has it been like early on in these discussions?
I think these discussions have been much more amicable than the discussions in 2010, 2011, 2009 about the collective bargaining agreement. The owners, even when we have intense disagreements on topics, I think in 2011 discussions, one side would get up and pick up their stuff and walk out the room, and then discussions would halt for a while. And that was the way, they manipulated the negotiations and leveraged their power. I think in this negotiation, even when there's an intense disagreement or guys not reaching the same conclusion on certain things, there's more discussion. There's not anyone just throwing a fit and getting up and leaving. There's, hey, I see your point of view. We have our perspective. We can agree to disagree at the time and maybe revisit it later. And I think that shows growth. That gives both sides a reason to feel optimism, because neither side is walking away. Both sides understand that there's a sense of urgency with the way, the economy and just the way TV in general, the landscape of TV is changing. So there is a sense of urgency on both sides, and both sides can understand and respect that.
When Roger Goodell said, I hope and I would really like to see something get done by the start of the 2019 season, that seemed incredibly unrealistic to me. And now I think it is unrealistic. But do you have, as you sit here right now, are you optimistic about being able to avoid a work stoppage?
I honestly, it's too early to honestly decide that. There's too much discussion going on. But like I said, there is a sense of urgency. I mean, there are guys, you know, on our executive committee that are meeting right now during training camp. You know, there are meetings set up for, what's today, the 13th? About a week from now, and then 2 weeks from now. And, you know, so if that's the kind of sense of urgency there is. If players are willing and coaches and organizations are willing to allow these players to miss camp for these meetings, that's how intense and really important they are, and that's how far we've come. Do I think they'll get done before September of this year? I have no idea, but it's doubtful, honestly. It's doubtful that they, you know, we'd be able to come to an agreement, get all the players to agree to it and sign, sealed, and delivered before September. I mean, that's – we're in training camp. It'd just take a lot of legwork. Even if we came to an agreement, it'd take a lot to get everybody to sign it, to see it, to understand it the way you need to get an agreement like that signed. But I do think it'll get done sooner than later. I don't think that it'll reach the deadline. And if it does, it'd be because something just astronomically went wrong and things just fell apart. And at that point, then there's a lot of worry on both sides.
One big issue that it seems like everybody in the public has an opinion on, and a lot of players have voiced an opinion, is the 18-game schedule. I personally think that there's no way it'll ever happen. But I'm not in those meetings. I mean, what's your personal opinion on the 18-game regular season schedule?
I think it has very little chance of happening unless something astronomical is conceded. And it would something that would be in the best interest of majority of our players. Now, you know, there's so many things that could happen. For the most part, I don't think that's on the table for our guys. You know, there was talk about the proposal, you know, in the media talking about 60 players and 18 players and each player only playing 16 games.
Yeah.
And you know, people can make those suggestions, but that doesn't even add up. So you'd say 46 active players every game. 46 players play 16 games. So then you have 14 players to play two games, regardless of how you slice it.
Right.
So you have 14 players to play kickoff, special teams, defense, and offense. And three of them are specialists. So there's a kicker, there's a holder, and there's a snapper. So that's three. So you have 11 to play three phases. Like, cool if we're talking about some kind of crazy Hunger Games of football. But if you're talking about a reasonable person, you know, having these discussions, then you're talking about 46 players playing.
You know, and as one very prominent NFL front office person told me, said, "How would you like to be in Arizona? And the Patriots are going to Arizona, and the Patriots announced that week this is the one time they're in Arizona for 8 years because that's how often you play cross conference. Mm-hmm. The one time you're there in 8 years, and they announce on Tuesday, oh, Tom Brady and Julian Edelman are not playing in the game today, and this week." Well, then your ticket is worthless. You're paying that for, and no offense to Brian Hoyer, but it's just, you've got to look at the reality of this. I understand it's an interesting discussion. It seems nonsensical to me.
But even then, you have games where you're saying, hey, we're up by 20, 21 at the half, and then you sit Tom Brady for the rest of the game. Because you want to save those two quarters for later in the season,
right? Yeah,
then you're playing. You know what I mean?
That's
interesting. Then you're playing quarter by quarter. I mean, we've really gone in depth about this discussion, as you can see. But then you're saying, "Hey, we're up by 30 in the third. Hey, sit the fourth." So you're saying, "Hey, he has three quarters left, so he can play three quarters of this game." Then you know what I mean? Then it's just not football at that point. You know, it's math, it's science, understanding these timelines. Then it's going too deep.
As somebody who basically has made his living playing football, but is also somebody who's worried about living till 70 and having every marble you were born with, what do you say? Has any mom, dad ever come up to you in the last couple of years and say, you know, I don't know, I don't think I should let my kid play football? What do you think, Richard Sherman?
Honestly, no. Fortunately, unfortunately, but I have to make those decisions for my kids.
Yeah.
And it's a obvious yes for me because I understand the good and the bad that comes with this game. And I understand the good and the bad that comes with life in general, with walking outside of your door. And, you know, anything can happen. You could say, hey, man, these people got in a terrible car accident, so don't drive your car. You know, never drive your car because these people you know got into a really bad accident. Now they're paralyzed, or now their arm doesn't work, or now they're this. Then it says, hey, Peter, man, don't ever get in a car because that could happen when you get in a car.
Yeah.
I understand that football teaches you values. It teaches you accountability. It teaches you work ethic. It teaches you how to be a teammate. It teaches you how to overcome adversity, how to deal with loss, how to deal with being coachable, you know? And all those are skills that translate to the real world. You know, you have to be, in just about any job, you have to be part of a team. You have to be able to be accountable, do your job, understand that you don't have to do everybody else's job. You have a responsibility that you have to master. Don't go into other people's lanes and try to, you know, right. And football teaches you those lessons, and it teaches you at a young age. It teaches you to overcome fear. It teaches you, hey, I'm 190 pounds and he's 305 pounds, and I still have to have the courage to go in there and mix it up with him.
Yeah.
And those are lessons that I don't know how to teach otherwise, you know. Now, I'm sure life would teach my son those lessons at some point or another, but I don't see football as man, he's going to go out there and he's going to get hurt, because you play the right way, you play with speed, you tackle with technique, there's a chance you get hurt, but there's also a chance that you learn these lessons, you have a great life, you have a career. And if you don't play professionally, if you don't even play in college, those life lessons that you learn will translate and elevate you in life in general.
Finish with two quick things, just thoughts that you have. How do you feel physically now, and what kind of year do you think you're going to have?
I feel phenomenal, actually. I mean, I don't know if it's because the way Kyle and our staff has gotten training camp, you know, with the ups and downs, and understand managing our reps, and as a team, they've, you know, functionality and the science behind the rep counts and things like that. But I really feel good. My legs finally feel under me. I feel confident. My weight's right where it should be. And then I'm wiser, you know, older and wiser. So I feel really good. I feel good about our team. I feel good about myself, and I'm excited to go.
And have you gotten over the Malcolm Butler interception?
Yeah, honestly, I haven't thought about that for years. Yeah, I mean, I've gotten over it as much as you can get over it. I've played seasons since then, so I don't – that's not much on my mind.
But – you would have liked that second ring.
Hey, I still would like it. Still playing, so I still got a shot.
Yeah. Richard Sherman, thanks a lot. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
And now my conversation with the rising star running back of the Carolina Panthers, Christian McCaffrey.
So happy to be joined by Christian McCaffrey, who has had quite a opening 2 years in the NFL. So congratulations on what you've done so far, Chris.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
So I do remember when I first met you, I met you at Stanford, and at the end of the conversation, you asked me if I had any sort of advice for you as you went through your career. And I don't think you took my advice, but I do remember telling you, yeah, you don't really need an agent on that first contract. But anyway, you wouldn't be the first one who didn't listen to me. But so I guess I am looking at what you have done early on in your career. And I'm like everybody else. I look at the tread on the tire of running backs. And I wonder, you know, over the last 4 years, including your last 2 years at Stanford, you have averaged 325 touches a game. And those are not easy touches. Now, sometimes you outrun people, but you also sometimes have to be a little bit of a Mack truck, as you know. So I wonder, as you look at it right now, how do you feel physically? Can you keep up this thing where you're getting upwards of 400 touches in a year?
You know, I think my answer to that would be yes. And I think the reason why, I would say I feel better now than I did, you know, after my junior season at Stanford. And I think the reason is, you know, you start to figure out your routine, taking care of your body. You know, you start getting the right guys to treat you. You know, our coaches do such a good job taking care of us as well, you know, during times like training camp, during the season. So when football is your life, you know, and your body is your business, you know, and you obviously have, you're open to way more resources and taking care of yourself. And I try to maximize that daily. So as long as I stay on top of it, you know, I feel great. Hope I continue to feel great. You know, obviously there's some bumps and bruises here and there, but I think the way the game is changing and the way that, you know, technology is changing and you have different, you know, soft tissue techniques, chiropractic techniques, I think.
Can you give me an example of something that you're doing that's fairly new that you really think is helping you physically?
Yeah, I mean, well, I wouldn't say there's anything new. I would say it's just a constant commitment. You know, it's not a Monday to Friday. It's a Sunday to Sunday. You know, I think I probably had, you know, some kind of hands-on, whether it's in the training room or outside, every single day of the year, you know, last year. You know, somebody, you know, whether it's before training, after training, you know, it's a constant process of taking care of yourself. And even when you feel good, you know, you got to stay ahead of the game and really, you know, it's like a Formula One car, right? You know, you're constantly tuning it up. If there's one screw loose, you got to fix it now. You know, you can't wait. Otherwise, that's when stuff starts to linger. So I've learned a lot in 2 years. I got a lot of great veterans on the team. You know, guys like Greg, guys like Cam, guys like, you know, Luke, who do such a good job of taking care of themselves. And they kind of, when you see them do that, it's easy as a young guy to come through and start to copy some of the things they do and then, you know, also do some of your own stuff.
I remember a couple of years ago I was with, in what I thought was his last year with the Cowboys, Jason Witten, and sort of talking to him about, and I was with him for a day on a Monday while that was sort of his repair day. It was during the season. And he did this thing that I had never seen before that I'd now heard of it from a few players, is cupping. You know, where, you know, you basically get the suction. And, you know, he had all these little circles all over his back and his legs and everything. But it's like there is no horizon. It's almost always changing. So is there a lot of new and interesting stuff, fairly new, that you do? Or do you find that you have found right now what works for you and you just do that?
Well, you know, I think it's a constant learning process. You know, if we had it all figured out, then, you know, everybody would have the answer. But, yeah. You know, not only is it constantly learning, it's constantly trying to figure out what's best for you. You know, some things might be better for other guys. Some bodies might respond to other bodies. You know, it's the beauty of football is you got so many different shapes and sizes that, you know, I, in my personal opinion, I think there's nothing better than somebody who knows how to, you know, manually treat you. You know, there's a whole bunch of machines out there that can help assist, but there's nothing like getting a good, you know, somebody who really knows how to adjust or really knows how to do good soft tissue work, and then, you know, all the other stuff are kind of compliments to that.
You know what I noticed, like, watching you out at practice today? I said to somebody, Christian McCaffrey doesn't look like he treats training camp as camp. It looks like he's playing a game, you know, because you – two or three times you outran guys on the defense, which you might do anyway. But I wonder, do you ever play a play with the ball in your hand, camp, OTAs, anything, where you're not treating it like it's a game?
I hope not. Yeah, I mean, I you know.
But do you feel that? Do you feel yourself practicing as hard and playing as hard as you would in a game?
Absolutely, yeah. I think you have to. You know, at this level, I take a lot of pride in practicing how I play. You know, I'm a guy who I love seeing live reps. I love seeing, you know, solid ball being played. You know, and there's nothing better than, you know, when you are in a time during training camp when it's early now. I mean, you don't play for another month. So getting these reps now, me being able to see it now full speed and kind of envision myself doing the same thing in the game, I think that's how it translates. You know, you gotta go hard, and you know, I let my coaches dictate when they want me to rest and when not. But it, you know, if I'm in, it's 100% full speed.
I once asked Adrian Peterson his philosophy the moment the ball got in his hands, and he said, "I run from color." And I said, "You have to explain that." He said, "Well." He was on the Vikings then. He said, so we're wearing purple. Probably the team that we're playing is wearing white. So I have it in my head that day. Anytime I see a white jersey, I am running in the opposite direction. And I will not be touched by him. That is what I'm determined to avoid. Now, obviously, I do get touched by him. I get floored by him. I get tackled by him. But I start with the philosophy that when I get the ball, as soon as I see somebody in the other jersey, I run away from him. So tell me exactly what your philosophy is when you get the ball in your hand.
Yeah, I mean, I think he hit it on the head. I think the running back position is such an instinctual position. You know, I think a lot of times people ask me, you know, after you make a good play, what were you thinking? And I really never have an answer because I'm not thinking at all. And I think that's what they call the zone, you know, when you're in the zone. And, you know, I've repped, you know, counter, I've repped power, I've repped outside zone 100 million times in my life. You know, it's the same schemes. I've run it with the same guys for a few months now. And it's, you know, once you get the ball, you know, as soon as you start thinking, that's when you're wrong. So I just kind of let my instincts take over, trust my eyes. And, you know, I think he's right. It's the Bobby Boucher, you know, style when he's talking with LT and Waterboy.
Yeah.
You know, the guy's got the ball, you go tackle him. It's the same running the ball. Yeah. You know, move the ball north and you know, hit the hole, don't think, and just let your instincts take over.
Even though you were drafted eighth and there were these great expectations when you walked in here, I think a lot of people wondered if your game would translate to the NFL from college. In college, you were sort of known as this do-everything guy. You know, you're going to wear down the opposition. You're going to be faster. You're going to be tougher and all that. But everybody here is so much better. Could you really do it in the NFL? Did you ever have any of those doubts from the time you got drafted?
I personally never had any of those doubts, no. And I'm really happy that the Panthers didn't either. And you know, that's all that matters to me. It's the team I'm on, and I, you know, I know Coach Rivera and, you know, trusted me, you know, from the time I got drafted. So to me, that's all that mattered. All the other outside voices, man, I just, you know, those are talking heads. You know, let them talk, and then, you know, let my play speak for itself.
Why do you think this offense with Norv Turner, which is a very multiple, it's kind of a traditional offense, but it's also very, very multiple. It's going to ask the running back to do a lot. Why is this offense a good fit for you?
Well, I think you look at the history of backs that Coach Turner's coached, you know, all of them have had great success. You know, he's had some of the best O-lines, the best quarterbacks, some of the best receivers, and you know, a lot of that's coaching, a lot of that's playing, and, you know, majority of it is the combo. You know, we need to execute when he calls the right play. And at the end of the day, you know, it's moving the ball north. And we have the pieces to do that. It's just a matter of going out and executing. And I know, you know, we've got to just trust our coaches because obviously they've all had success at, you know, every single level. So being able to trust them and when it comes to game day, make plays. And, you know, it sounds cliche, but that's really what it boils down to, beating the guy in front of you.
You've got a new running backs coach this year in Jake Peets, who comes from – he's had a bunch of experiences, but he most recently comes from working with Nick Saban in Alabama. A, what has he been like? B, does he bring a little bit of Alabama here to Carolina?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's the Energizer Bunny, man. Yeah. Every single meeting he's on, and we love it. You know, he brings the juice. He sets the tone for our room, and – you know, we really don't have a seasoned, you know, 9-10 year vet. You know, Cap's going into year 5, and then I'm, you know, going into year 3, and we're the oldest ones in the room. So having him in the room has been a lot of fun. You know, he's a heck of a coach. Obviously, he's been a quarterback coach, so kind of bringing that aspect of the game to our room as well, really understanding defenses, you know, understanding coverages, understanding fronts, and the way he phrases it and kind of bringing it to us to understand what the quarterback's seeing has been huge. So it's been great being able to learn from him, and you know, I'm excited for this year with him.
This is a ridiculously oversimplistic question. It almost sounds like a talk show question, but I can't think of any other way to ask it. What's it like to play with Cam Newton? And how do you believe, if at all, he has made you a better player?
Well, it's a lot of fun, first off. You know, obviously, he is who he is, and he's like that 24/7. For me, I've been very type A my whole life, and I still am. But you know, I came into the league with a chip on my shoulder, a lot to prove, very head down, locked in all the time, and I think that was good for me, but it also set me back a little bit. And playing with Cam is kind
of – How so? What do you mean by that?
Well, I would just say Cam made it more fun, you know, and okay. I was allowed to be loose and have fun and really appreciate the game more and you know, not be so, you know, critical of myself all the time. You know, obviously I'm still very hard on myself, and I think that's the way it should be. But Cam, you know, kind of brought the fun back in football for me, and – I'm very thankful for that. Obviously, he plays with a lot of energy. He's a heck of a leader. Works his butt off, and you know, for me as a young guy, I didn't know what to expect coming here. You know, when I find out Cam's your quarterback, you really don't know what to expect. But when you meet him and when you start playing with him, you realize that he's a heck of a leader. Obviously, he's a phenom of a talent, and you know, once again, the energy level is consistent every single day, every practice, every game, and you know, he kind of sails the ship. So when he's on, we're on.
You talk about sort of being your own worst critic. Tell me a play, maybe in 2018, that you feel like you messed up. And what did that do to you mentally? And what was it hard to sleep? Were you beating yourself up? Take me into your mind when you make a play that doesn't look so great as everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think there, you know, there's little things here and there all the time. You know, nobody's perfect. And, you know, guys, you know, I don't think you could ever find somebody that played a perfect game. That's very rare. But I've learned, and you know, one guy who kind of brought this to my attention too was Ryan Khalil. You know, I'd, you know, not gotten a whole
your
lot of
– your center who now is
yeah.
not your center
right,
anymore.
Right, right,
yeah.
But when I was a rookie, I dropped a pass. We were playing Atlanta, and I was pretty down on myself. And, you know, he kind of – brought me back up in a harsh way, and I felt like I needed that. So
on the field
yeah, just, you know, getting little reminders like that, especially as a young player. I mean, this was 2 years ago, but as a young player, you know, in the NFL, nobody's perfect, and you have to strive for perfection, but understand that when you make a mistake, you can't dwell on it, and you gotta go to the next play mentality. You know, and I think over the years you learn it's okay to be hard on yourself as long as you use it in a positive manner for the next play.
I find, you know, there were two seasons last year in the NFL that were kind of record-breaking seasons in this way. Since 2006, when Pro Football Focus came into being, they're the stat nerds who look at every player on every play. So last year, DeAndre Hopkins, 116 catches, zero drops. Christian McCaffrey, and I think I'm right, 107 catches, zero drops. How much pride do you take in playing a season without dropping a football?
Yeah, I mean, I take a lot of pride in it. You know, if Cam throws me the ball, you know, it's my job to catch it. And, you know, I definitely take a lot of pride on it, obviously, in practice. You know, working on that constantly, being able to do multiple things out of the backfield. I think I, you know, definitely pride myself on being a multidimensional back, and I think that's a huge part of the game. So that definitely is something I take a lot of pride in.
I wonder, as you watch this game now, last year there were the fewest rushing attempts in the NFL in this century. And I wonder, when you look at football, to the rise of the passing games, to quarterbacks with 700 attempts and all that, and basically the running game being not insignificant, but clearly less important than it has been at other times in football history. What do you think of the evolution of the game right now?
Well, I think over the years, I mean, you've seen football, you know, come in trends. And I think right now it's trending to a very fast game. Obviously, it's very pass heavy, but I think the run now more than ever is more important. You know, you see a lot of teams now with backs like, you know, myself or Kamara, or guys who can do a bunch of different things so they don't have to leave the field. And I think the biggest thing for offenses now is they want to create matchup problems. You know, so when you have a back who can run the ball between the tackles, outside the tackles, but also, you know, be another receiver as an outlet, that's huge for teams because, you know, it once again, it just creates a matchup issue. You know, if they bring a safety in to cover you, now you can run the ball. If they keep a linebacker in, now you try to mix in some pass plays to just constantly create, you know, opportunities for your athletes to be in space. So, you know, like you said, I caught 107 balls last year. You know, not a lot of those were downfield routes. So some of these, you can call them extended handoffs,
right.
You know, little drop-down balls. And those are huge. You get 5 yards on that. You know, it's second and five. People take that for granted. But, if you know, you average five plays a 5 yards of play in the NFL, that's pretty dang good. So I think that's something that obviously gets taken for granted. And, you know, I think the NFL is definitely doing this constantly. But right now I think it's definitely more of a speed game. You see these inside backers now running 4.3s, 4.4s at the combine, and they're going pretty high in the draft because a lot of these teams want these guys to cover, you know, the backs that we just talked about.
Do you right now, as you sort of look at football, is it, do you think it'll ever go back to an Earl Campbell, you know, or a, you know, a big back era, Jerome Bettis, or do you think it's going to be like this for a while or maybe forever?
Yeah, I have no idea. I think in the NFL now, I think you need backs who run like those guys, but also can do both, you know, and those guys back then could do both. It was just the wave of the NFL. You know, Walter Payton was one of the most dynamic backs in the world, and, you know, he could do everything. The difference was, you know, guys would call power a lot more. They'd call inside zone a lot more, and that's just the way it was.
With Christian McCaffrey of the Panthers, a couple more. I always ask young players this, especially early in their career, but it's got to be somewhat of an educational culture shock a little bit when football becomes your business and it's 24/7. You don't have the 20-hour rule like you have in college. And I wonder, now that you get to spend basically as much time as you want on football and on studying and everything, can you point to maybe one or two things in this particular offseason that you truly studied? Maybe it was another back or another kind of offense, but you studied because you said, I want to be better at X.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a lot that I look into in the offseason. You know, the first thing I do is I go back and look at every single touch I had, every single non-touch I had, and kind of evaluate where, you know, my strengths and weaknesses are. And at the running back position, it's a constant, you know, process of getting better. You know, obviously you want to get bigger, stronger, faster, quicker, better route runner, you know, better hands, all that stuff. That's you know, not the easy part, but that's the given. And I think understanding the game mentally more and really understanding blocking schemes and how, you know, not just the scheme, but how certain guys play. You know, how does Trey Turner pull versus how does Greg Van Roten pull, you know, and what are their techniques? What are they trying to do on certain plays? So then when you get to the game, you're very familiar with how they do certain things. You know, looking at defenses, you know, what are some consistencies when they're playing, you know, palms coverage? How am I going to do this on this route? Just, you know, little details like that are you know, you can't learn enough. And that's the beauty of football, is it's a constant learning process. So, you know, I definitely do a lot of film study on other teams, how teams play backs that are similar to me, stuff like that.
Have you gotten to know guys like Kamara and guys in the NFL who probably when you watch the game, you look at them and you say, I'm a lot like them?
I mean, yeah, it's you know, definitely a big mutual respect for all those guys. I think the running back culture is very small in the NFL, and you know, have a lot of respect for all those guys.
Don't you remember, I'm now remembering when you told me it, you know, before you started playing, that you had reached out to Le'Veon Bell and he was really good to you in terms of looking at you as a player and giving you advice. Is he somebody who you still are in touch with now?
Not as much anymore, no, but I mean, once again, you know, when I'm a sophomore in college, freshman, sophomore in college, and someone like that reaches out to you, it definitely means a lot. So, you know, I still watch all, you know, all those guys' films, and definitely take a lot of what they do.
He's one of the most interesting running backs I've ever seen, because he pauses.
Very
and he has
patient.
Patience.
Yeah, very patient.
You know?
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, one of those guys who he does such a good job setting up his blocks and letting them develop, you know, before the play happens. So,
yeah,
a lot you can take from him.
I'll finish on this. So, you know, probably that at NBC I work with Chris Sims, and there is a Chris Sims story that you have about your youth that I don't even know that Chris Sims is going to remember, but I hope you can tell it.
Yeah, I don't know if Chris will remember either. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. But him and Kyle were good buddies back in the day.
He and Kyle Shanahan.
Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
And this was when my dad was playing. Obviously, Coach Mike Shanahan, he was coaching at the time. So Kyle was, I think he was, you know, I don't know what he did with the team, but he had some sort of involvement in the team. He was a kid. So him and Chris babysat me one time. I don't remember when it was, but you know, that definitely happened at one point.
Now, did you take advantage of them?
I have no idea. I was so young, I don't remember, but it's funny looking back and just to kind of see where both those guys are now. It's hilarious. You know, obviously Kyle's done an unbelievable job in his coaching career, but it's funny the dynamic, you know, between both of our trends and where we went. So, but yeah, that's a funny story. Fun fact for everyone.
Fun fact: I was once babysat by Chris Sims and Kyle Shanahan. Hey, listen, Christian, have a great year. Really wish you the best, and you're just really, really fun to watch. You really are. It's fun and it's interesting because, as you said, when you came in the NFL, there were a lot of people who really wondered, you know, how your game would translate, and now they're watching you and saying, translated pretty darn good. So good luck this year.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot.
And now my conversation, 5 minutes with a writer, a veteran beat guy covering the 49ers, Matt Maiocco of NBC Sports Bay Area. People probably can hear some music that I don't recognize. I'm not sure you do either. But anyway, we are here on the sidelines of 49ers camp, and you're my 5 minutes with a writer guest this week. Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm always here, but it's a pleasure for you to be here with me.
Yeah, well, thank you. So, Matt, I think the first thing that everybody would think when talking about the 49ers right now is the state of Jimmy Garoppolo. So obviously, with Garoppolo having been hurt last year so early in the season, he's 27 years old now. He's started 10 NFL games. He's a jillionaire. I mean, I guess, what evidence do you see in this training camp so far of how he's doing?
Well, he does look a little bit rusty, and that's to be expected. He sustained that ACL tear week 3 of last season. You know, I think from the 49ers standpoint, obviously disappointed that they didn't have Garoppolo for the full year last year. But I think the most disappointing thing about that was that, like you mentioned, he's still inexperienced. The 49ers were not set up to win last year, but they were set up to make an impact this year. And so all those mistakes that Garoppolo would have had last year, all the learning that he would have done last year, is out the window. So he's basically, like you mentioned, a very inexperienced starter. One of the things they tried to do late in the year was have him learn, you know, behind the scenes, bring in Mike Shanahan, Kyle's dad, and they in December spent some time together going through defenses, watching film. So they hope that kind of accelerated that learning curve.
Matt, what right now would you say? I mean, I have read and heard stuff about the injury bug that hit this camp. I guess they were practicing in a more physical way. Bosa goes down, and look, I'm not saying he's injury prone, because that was a totally fluky thing. Somebody fell on his knee.
300-pounder.
Gave him a high ankle sprain, and they're lucky that's all it was. But how long do you anticipate Bosa misses?
Well, you know, the team is hoping that he'll be available week 1. That's probably pretty optimistic. And even if he is available for week 1, you know, how effective is he going to be? You know, his game is predicated on that lower body strength and turning the corner and his balance and his athleticism, the usage of his hands, his hips. So it'll be pretty tough for him to get out there. But I got to tell you, the first 10 practices, he was outstanding. I mean, he made a huge impact on this practice field, unlike any
rookie
I've
seen. Describe him.
Well, he's next level technically sound. You know, this is a guy that when he was at St. Thomas Aquinas was basically doing college type of moves at the high school level. When he got to Ohio State, he was doing NFL types of moves there, learning from his brother and the great defensive line coach they had at Ohio State. So he steps in here, he was born for this, and he was not at all intimidated. In fact, Joe Staley has learned a lot from working with Nick Bosa. So he's a next level technician.
What are your biggest questions right now that you have for this team, which year 3 of Shanahan and Lynch, they got to win?
They do have to win. I think the offense will always be pretty good as long as Kyle Shanahan is pushing the buttons. Last year on defense, 2 interceptions the entire year. I did not, that is accurate. I did not misstate that. 2, the worst number in the history of the NFL. They have to have playmakers. They have to affect the quarterback. The defensive backs have to get their hands on the ball. when they looked at that number of interceptions, they did not address the defensive backfield. They really made very few moves there. They did bring in Jason Verrett, who's injured again. They're hoping for him to be ready to start the regular season. They re-signed Jimmy Ward, but that's it. The way they feel like they can improve the playmaking ability and creating more turnovers was by addressing the pass rush, drafting Nick Bosa, trading for Dee Ford. And you know, you combine that with DeForest Buckner. You combine that with, you know, they're hoping for improved play as a pass rusher from Eric Armstead and Solomon Thomas. Now they believe that those can be the guys who will affect the quarterback, and it'll pay dividends on the back end.
There has been no team in the NFL that has devoted as much resources in draft capital and free agency on the defensive line in the 35 years I have covered the NFL than the 49ers in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, DeForest Buckner, Solomon Thomas, Dee Ford, Nick Bosa. You know, I'm forgetting nine people.
Yeah, five first-round draft picks on that defensive
line. So is this the year that the Niners finally terrorize quarterbacks?
It should be. And, you know, those names I mentioned, you know, Dee Ford and Nick Bosa in particular, and Ronald Blair, who was one of their top pass rushers last year, who's now just going to be a rotation guy. If those guys can stay healthy, because both Dee Ford and Nick Bosa have had injury issues in the past, if those guys can stay healthy, we're looking at a really good defensive line. And John Lynch wants that defensive line to be dominant. And when I saw that group together, when they're healthy out there in the practice field, it did look like a dominant defensive line. So they're definitely on the right track there, as far as putting the pieces together to really be an impactful unit.
Matt Maiocco, final question for you. I'm going to pick these guys to make the playoffs, because I think that almost by flooding this position group, I just think their defensive front is going to be really good. And I think Garoppolo is going to be really good. Will you pick the San Francisco 49ers to make the playoffs?
You know, I don't think I will. I think I look at them as a 9-7 team, which, you know, when you the way I always look at it is kind of plus or minus two. So this has a chance to be a really good team, but they haven't proven they can stay healthy. I need to see it first. And I think their first two games, at Tampa, at Cincinnati, that's going to be very telling. If they can come out of that 2-0, I think they're playoff bound. But until they show it, I'm a little bit more of a hard sell.
5 minutes with a writer with Matt Maiocco. Thanks for the education, Matt.
All right, Peter. Always my pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for joining me on this week's podcast. Really enjoyed doing it for you. Going to have more conversations in the coming weeks that I've recorded and will continue to record on the rest of the training camp trip. I'm really enjoying this aspect of my job, of basically not just getting sound bites, of having real conversations with people. Hope you're liking it too, and I look forward to seeing you next week.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.